So we're going to learn a little bit more about the halachot of Pesach, and after that we're going to learn a little bit how to prepare for the Lel Seder and what's going on in the Lel Seder. So we left off that before Pesach we're going to burn all our chametz after we cleaned, after we did everything, and we do the bdikah this Sunday night. At least in this year, I know sometimes we do classes about a certain holiday and then people see it a year later in a video or 2 years later and they get confused. So, and they email us, what? Pesach is Tuesday? I thought it's Thursday. No, it's an old video. So for this year we're going to do our bdikaya on Sunday. It's important to do it on time. We spoke about it last class, how it is important to do the bdikah right after the sun goes, after the stars go out. And we went through all that. The next day we burn the chametz. And it's important also to make sure you do that on time. And we went through all that. Now, we want to know what's going to happen if I find chametz somewhere in my possession during Pesach. I open the closet, something, I forgot something, a kid moved out. What happens if I see chametz during Pesach? Or of course on Chol HaMoed, and it happens. המוצא חמץ בביתו בחול המועד יוציאנו וישרפנו. If you find chametz in Chol HaMoed, by mistake, by it doesn't matter how, you just find it. You take it out of the house and you burn it. You set it up on fire. ואם יש בו כזית, יברך בתחילה על ביעור חמץ. If you have a very small piece, what's called כזית. Kezait is 29 grams. It can be like, we're not talking about a crumb right now, a piece. If it's a piece, you have to remember the measurement because that's the measurements we're going to go by in the Lel Seder. It's called kezait. And kezait is 29 pounds. And if picture the shmura matzah, you know it's about this size. So a kezait is about something like that. Give or take. You have to remember it because in the Lel Seder you have to eat four times kezait. But if you find a piece of crumb that is this big, then you just take it out and you burn it. If you find a big piece that has minimum 29 grams, then you don't have to start weighing it. You just have to evaluate more or less. Then you actually have to say the bracha al biur chametz because you're literally burning the chametz. מצאו בימים הראשונים ובימים האחרונים של יום טוב או בשבת חול המועד שאז אסור לטלטלו משום מוקצה. What happens if you find it during חול המועד or during שבת of חול המועד that you can't carry it? It's מוקצה. And it will be מוקצה for חול המועד and on שבת. I mean שבת on חול המועד. יקוף עליו כלי עד מוצאי יום טוב או מוצאי שבת ואז ישרפנו. You will take some type of a bucket or a bowl, put it on it, and then after the Shabbat, you can take it out and burn it. But just know that if you do find chametz during Shabbat of Chol HaMoed, then you can't carry it. It's mukteh. Im sorefet hachametz b'motzei Yom Tov Acharon, what happens if you find it during the last Yom Tov of Pesach, and you're going to burn it after, yisrafenu bli bracha afilu sheyesh bo kezait. Now what's going to happen? You're going to burn it after Pesach. So if you're burning it already after Pesach, then you burn it without a bracha, if there's a big amount of it. So if you're finding it during Chol HaMoed, it's a small piece, take it out, put it in a can of olives or whatever it is, put it in and burn it. Set it up on fire. You can put some oil or anything that is flammable, set it up on fire, that it will burn completely. If it's during Shabbat, that you can carry it, cover it, next day burn it. If it's after Pesach and there's a big amount, you don't say a bracha. Im soref, okay, that we did, sorry. Okay, Chag HaPesach נגמר במוצאי שמיני של פחג של פסח, עם צאת הכוכבים, וכל דיני חמץ בפסח תקפים עד אותו זמן. Now, when does really Pesach ends? Pesach ends after the 8th day of שמיני של פסח, and Motzei Chag, in the evening. which means all the laws that have to do with Pesach, you carry them till that day. Some people say, oh, we're only counting 7 days. So Pesach is, you have to count the full 8 days, and only Motzei Achag, that's when Pesach is over. Not a minute before that. And it's important also, we're going to learn soon about the selling of the chametz. It's important not to open the cabinets of the sold chametz before the actual time, because the rabbis have to run home and buy the chametz back. A lot of people, what they do, they don't go to shul. They come, they're already at home when the holiday is over. They right away run to the cabinet to take out the cracker or to take out the biscuits for not eating the biscuit for the whole week, and they jump on the biscuit right away. So, no, you have to wait. First of all, you have to wait till the leaving of the holiday, the Tzitzit Chag. Then you have to wait a certain amount of time. Wherever you sell the chametz, you have to ask the rabbi, when are you going to buy it back? Sometimes the rabbi will tell you, I'm only going to buy it an hour after the holiday. Now, usually the rabbis, they know that everybody is hungry after a whole week of not eating the crackers. They have the urge of eating now the biscuit that they hid in the cupboard before. That's what we used to do in old days. We used to already prepare a surprise. So right after the Chag, you can break the fast and right away eat a cracker or something, I mean, like tasty, like a biscuit. Or so you need to give some time for the rabbi to go back to his office and buy the chametz off the non-Jew. So don't run and jump on the cabinet. Just as you know, till the last moment of Pesach, plus a good amount of time for the rabbi to go and buy the chametz back, don't jump on the cabinets yet. Have that a little bit of a... Itkafia. You know, you survive the week, another hour is not going to make much of a difference. You know, you see sometimes people on Motzei Achag, you go next to a pizzeria, like people will jumping on the pizzeria, like as if pizza is such a great thing. You know, it's only been a week. You can go another day without the dough. So, it's important to know that the end of the holiday, I mean, I have to correct what I just said, because I'm used to being in America. In America, you'll have a full 8 days. Here, we have full 7 days. So I apologize. I know most of our students online are in the diaspora, so I also, my mind has already switched to talk to them. We celebrate 7 days, so don't add another day here. I know you want to be on one day, to add a day on your diet, but here we celebrate 7 full days, and the 7th day is also the Achron Shel Pesach. For our students that are in the diaspora, they celebrate 8 full days. So I just have to correct myself here. So all the laws of chametz are in effect till that moment, and we got to be very, very careful not to jump on our chametz the second that the holiday leaves. לפיכך יש להיזהר שלא לקנות חמץ שנאפה או הוכן בפסח על ידי יהודי. This is another very important thing, is to remember and to be very careful not to buy chametz that was baked or that prepared in any type of a way by a Jew during Pesach. And this is a problem that a lot of people do here in Israel. They keep the law of Pesach, but they'll go an hour later to a bakery of a Jew that did not observe the holiday, and he already prepared the pitot 2 hours before. So it can happen many times here in Israel that unfortunately the Jews here, they don't observe the holiday, or they will observe it, but that's their business. A bakery, they'll come an hour before. Well, the place has to have a hechsher. And if the place has a certification that is trustworthy, you know the place is completely locked. If not, he's not going to get a hechsher. But a lot of people are in the beginning of their tshuva, or they're just a little bit not aware. And they will be like, okay, I live in a big city. I live like in a city like Yerushalayim, Tzfat. You don't have it, but in Yerushalayim, you'll be like, okay, I the whole week I'm dreaming of the pita, and they run right away to the first bakery that is open, and they might have a problem because the bakery was open during Pesach and they started cooking already during Pesach or baking. So again, it's all about controlling yourself for another 2-3 hours. And not jumping on the chametz. And I'm saying that because I know that's what people do. 2 minutes after Pesach, people are already in line in the pizzeria shop. So I know you're not like that, but it's always good to remind you. Ki gam lachar haPesach asur lenot mechametz sheyashayach leYisrael bePesach. It's also extremely important to remember that you're not allowed to enjoy chametz that was in a possession of a Jew during Pesach. So if you have a neighbor or a family member that you eat by, a lot of people, they kosher their kitchen, especially when they have a family that eats kosher, and they will not eat chametz on Pesach, but they didn't sell their chametz. So in the beginning when I became religious and my mom koshered her house, the kitchen was kosher, so we can eat there. She would not eat chametz on Pesach, but she never sold the chametz on Pesach. So she owned that chametz on Pesach. Now, she and me, or anybody else, will have a problem eating there. Because the chametz that was owned by a Jew during Pesach, you can't eat it even after Pesach. So you have to be also careful with that. Yes? You want to ask a question?
Yeah. That kitchen where the chametz was not sold is not kosher for 1 year until the next Pesach where she does the things properly.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll repeat what Koti said because it's important to know. If this is the situation, this is very common because a lot of people will go to eat by somebody, a child, a family relative, a cousin, a mother, it doesn't matter what it is, that individual kept Pesach. And that individual, I'm just going to give you the example of my mother and me. Instead of saying that person, this person, that person. There were years that my mom, we kashered my mom's kitchen because she wanted me to eat there. So the kasher, her kitchen is 100% kosher. In the beginning, many years ago, my father was prohibited to come into the kitchen. My mom did not allow him. She would put like these, do not cross this line ribbons. Because he didn't know the rules, and she was like, you're going to start messing things up. So he was prohibited of coming into the kitchen, which he was very happy, because he didn't have to wash anything, he didn't have to do anything. She would do, I do the dishes, I wash everything, don't come in. So my mom made the kitchen kosher, so I can go and eat there. Now came Pesach, and I told her, you're not allowed to eat chametz. Okay, so she didn't eat chametz. But all of her chametz were still in her possession. She didn't sell it. Now, for the next coming year, I was not allowed to eat that chametz. Nobody's allowed to eat that chametz, even herself. She can't eat this chametz because she owned it during Pesach. But you're not allowed to eat it for the whole year, if it would stay fresh, till the next Pesach, if she sells it. So if hypothetically, it's things that are sealed, and somehow they kept their freshness, then if she sold them again the next year in Pesach, then after that you can eat it. But usually a normal kitchen does not keep things for more than a year. And if they keep things for more than a year, I do not recommend to eat there. So that's one thing. So just know, when you go to visit a relative that tells you, yes, I observed Pesach, you can ask, did you sell your chametz? And if they tell you, I did not sell my chametz, then all that chametz has to be burnt. I mean, you would not eat it.
Can you give it to a non-Jew?
You can give it to a non-Jew. But if not, then you have to, you cannot eat it. And if you want to, if that person is a person that's becoming more observant, you have to tell them that they can't eat it, and they can either give it to a non-Jew or to sell it, or to burn it. So,
person says to you, I don't keep any chametz during Pesach. So the selling is not necessary?
Well, they still have to sell their plates and their cups and everything.
Has to.
Yeah, anything that has the taste of chametz cannot be a possession on Pesach.
So I am not going to be able to eat in that kitchen, not because she didn't do it, and the plates are not
exactly.
Or the meat is not permitted because of the
Pesach. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of rules with. There's a lot of rules with a kitchen that is kosher but is not observed the right way. That's why a lot of people say, I go to many houses and people tell me, please sit down and eat with us. And I'll tell them nicely that I can't eat in their kitchen. So they will tell me, I've been to houses, they will tell me I'm vegan. So there's no meat and there's no dairy. And even in that case, it's not good because I would tell them, I'm sorry, I still can't eat because you didn't take your dishes to the mikveh. Whether you eat just carrots all day long, it doesn't matter. If you have a knife to cut the carrot, the knife had to go to the mikveh. So you have to be very careful with a lot of people that they tell you, I don't eat meat, or I didn't eat chametz throughout Pesach, or I didn't have any chametz. But your stuff, your plate, your dishes, they have the taste of the chametz. Now, it doesn't mean that all their stuff has the taste of chametz, but the things that is with chametz, then you can't eat it. And then you might have a problem eating in that kitchen. So you have to be very, very, very careful with that. Now, what else? צריך גם להיזהר שלא ליהנות אחר הפסח מחמץ של ישראל. החשוד שלא מחוק הדת. Okay, this is exactly what we're talking about. You got to be very careful with the chametz of a Jew that there's a doubt that he didn't sell it during Pesach exactly how he needs to. And that can be with store owners because you can have a store that all the products are very kosher. All the products are 100% kosher. But the store owner is not keeping the laws. Now he owns all this chametz during Pesach. And now you come and you buy these kosher products from a store that a Jew owned the products. So you have to be very careful also with that. So again, when we live in a very small city like Tzfat, and you go into the same store every day and you see that the chametz was covered or stored, and you know the store owner, and in most cases if they have a certification, you know that there are checked and obligated to sell everything. Even here you would still want to check that. But when you go to a big city, you have to be aware, wait a minute, maybe that store owned the chametz during Pesach. And then I can't buy their products because they own that chametz. So that's why, unfortunately, it's very, very tricky because sometimes you go to a big city like Tel Aviv, and people live in Tel Aviv, or they just travel there, and they'll go into a supermarket and be like, "Hey, look, all the products are kosher. I have no problem in buying this product right now." You're right; you don't have a problem, but that product was owned by a Jew during Pesach and was not sold, and now this is going to be a problem to eat. So you have to be very careful with that. And I know it's becoming now, but a lot of people will be like, oh my gosh, now how am I going to track that? So you have to make sure that you, in the next 2, 3, 4 months, you're buying in a very strict place, that you know that their stuff was sold during Pesach. I mean, usually here in Israel, all the major stores and departments for food, they do that. In the diaspora, then people that live abroad, if you have family there, if they live in a very Jewish community, then it's no problem. But for the ones who live outside the Jewish communities, and now in America, Baruch Hashem, you can find kosher food almost anywhere. Now, if it's in a big place like Costco and department stores like that that hold the kosher food, you have no problem because most likely the owner of the store is not Jewish. So you have no problem. But when it comes to the small stores, people have to be just very particular. So I know this puts people in a bind because they're like, how am I going to track now? He did sell it, he didn't sell it. So just, that's why a lot of people say, I'm just fine with buying the product that is kosher. I don't care if the store is kosher. So you can buy kosher products in a store that is open on Shabbat. You might have a problem. Because you know, okay, the owner of the store is not keeping Shabbat. He's not observing the Shabbat. Most likely he didn't observe Pesach. Most likely he doesn't observe any rule. I told you time once that I went to a restaurant when I once spoke to you about telling you how most of the restaurants, they're not let's say that they're kosher, they're not really kosher for many different reasons. To buy a sticker that says kosher costs exactly $20. So, and I gave an example that once I went to a restaurant, we went to my in-laws, and my in-laws said, yeah, well, there's a kosher restaurant here, let's go there. And when I asked my mother-in-law, she was like, yeah, all the religious people eat there, don't worry, it's kosher. And when we came, it had big signs, kosher, everything is kosher. And then when we walked in, and I, you know, looked around, I didn't see, nothing looked so kosher there. And when the waiter came, I asked him, is the mashgiach here? He looked at me like, what? Told him, is there a mashgiach here? And he was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I told him, is there a rabbi in the kitchen or somebody in the kitchen? He was like, no. So I told him, so who's in the kitchen? So he says, me and Jose. So I told him, okay. So I told him, and I went into the kitchen, and I was like, is the owner of the place here? No, he comes at 11, he comes at 4. And I was like, so there's no mashgiach here? And he's like, what's a mashgiach? I told him, the one who comes and checks everything. He's like, oh, the rabbi comes every half a year, once a year, every couple of months he comes. And I was like, but every day there's nobody here? He's like, no. So I told him, so who starts the oven? So he says, me. So he says, and the food is not kosher here. Because you look like you seem like a very nice individual, but a Jew has to start the oven. And if the Jew didn't start the oven, then this is called Bishul Akum. You can't eat it, it's not kosher. So, and I told him, it was a dairy restaurant. So a lot of people say, oh, dairy restaurant, there's no problems with a dairy restaurant because the milk doesn't need to be slaughtered. But the problem is, I told him, do you and I now ordered an omelette, do you check the eggs? No. Why should I check the eggs? Yeah, because some eggs have blood in them. And do you check the salad? I ordered a salad now. You check the lettuce? You check the vegetables? Is there any bugs in it? No, we wash it. And then I told him, so the place is not kosher. He's like, no, everything is kosher. And he pulls out products. Doesn't he see? It says it's kosher. He says, yeah, I'm very happy that the salt that you're giving me has an OU in it. But who says the restaurant is open? It's kosher. And I told him, and are you open on Shabbat? Oh, no, no, no. We only come 3 hours before that to start preparing the food. So when people come after Shabbat, the food is ready. So this is open on Shabbat. So, you know, it has all the nice stickers. They get a certification from a rabbi that is retired or is not particular about what's going on. And people come, they see a big sign kosher, they see people with yarmulkes, and they walk in and they think it's kosher.
The rabbi would be aware of a place like that. I mean, maybe it's a different kind of rabbi, but you think.
The thing is that the rabbi that gave the certification, then I'm sorry to tell you, is not a rabbi.
Right.
This is what's called machshil harabim. You're making the public fail. So if he went to some course and got a certification, I know women that are rabbis because they have a certification. To go and learn the material and to go to an exam, then that anybody can do. Even a non-Jew can go to a rabbinical school, and if it's not a kosher school, they'll give him a certification. A rabbi, according to the halakha, is not the person who went to school to learn for that. Because in the olden days, how it was, and up until today, in order to be a rabbi, you need a rabbi to give you what's called smicha, to give you the authorship, or however you say that. I don't know if I'm saying the right word. Smicha is you're getting a authorization. How is it done? Not any rabbi can give smicha. I can't give somebody smicha. You have to be a special rabbi that is able to give smicha for to be a rabbi. Now, how it works in the rabbinical world, you can have, there's many different levels. I mean, 90% of the rabbis in the world, they have what's called a certification, a smicha l'rabbanot, and that's where it stops. And then a fraction of them go to the next level, like you do an MBA, and you learn to be a professor, or whatever it is. There's different levels. The next level is to be a dayan, and then the next level, there's many different levels in the rabbinical world. And very few have their authorization to give over, I don't know how you say it in English, ordination. That's how you say it? A rabbinical ordination, you need to be authorized to do that. Now, in the rabbinical world, you can later on become a scribe, a mohel, whatever it is. You can become a scribe and a mohel without having a rabbinical ordination. One doesn't stop the other. But in order to give somebody a rabbinical ordination, you have to be allowed to do that. And there's not a lot of rabbis in the world that are allowed to do that. There's probably a couple dozens in our generation. And they got ordinated by somebody above them who got, is that the right word, ordinated?
Yes.
And they got, and all the way up to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu was the first one who was able to give smicha. And smicha is not a blanket. Smicha in Hebrew is a blanket. Smicha is the authorization to be able to be called a rabbi. Now, to be called a rabbi, that doesn't mean you're a rabbi, because I do know people that they got a kosher smicha, but they, if they don't follow the rules, then they're not kosher, so to say. So there are all sorts of schools and all sorts of places that they come and they tell you, here, we'll give you that. So they teach you the actual material. And you go to a test and you pass the test with flying colors. But the certification you get is not a real certification. So it might say rabbi, but if it was not given by the right source, you might have on your business card it says rabbi, but in the heavens you're not considered a rabbi. So there are rabbis that they're not rabbis. They just inherited the title. I'm talking like in the case what you're talking about in a city. So he doesn't care. So like I told you, I know women that are rabbis. And in their mind, they did the tests. And you know what? They probably know the material better than other people. But the fact that they know the material and they know the laws, that's one thing. The whoever gives you the permission, so to say, or the status, has to be a particular individual. Like in the kingdom worlds, you can't just become a king. A king has to anoint you. The point is that there are, in a big city like New York, you can't know about everything that moves. In a little city like San Diego, yes, you would expect at least the rabbi of the city to hear what's going on and to go and check it. This was also a pretty, not such a big city, it was in Philadelphia. Now Philadelphia has about 40 kosher restaurants, 50 kosher restaurants. Could very much be that the rabbi of the city doesn't know on them, or that he doesn't know what's going on there. He's busy in his own world. He knows that this individual gave the certification. Now, a lot of times what happens, I met into a situation, I know we're totally sidetracking, but it's important to know, when I lived in New York, so there was a certain bakery / cafeteria that we used to buy from. And we used to go, we saw the certification, and there was nobody Jewish there, which I don't care. But some things, they need to be turned on by, the ovens have to be turned on by a Jew. But anyways, one time we noticed that some of the products, I looked once at the milk, and the milk in America, you could recognize the milk right away when it's kosher. It's not here that it all looks the same. Anyways, long story short, we noticed a couple times that there are all sorts of problems there. And when I called the rabbi, and I told him, and he's like, no, I didn't know. And then he obligated the place to correct it, and he's like, if not, I'm just going to take away your certification. Now, some places, the rabbi will come, check the place, and will give a certification and leave and come once a week, once 2 weeks, once a month. And he will count on the fact that the owner is going to see what's going on. And that's not a good certification. It doesn't mean the rabbi is not good. Some people, if they doesn't have a certain certification, they're like, okay, if it doesn't have that certification, I'm not eating there. And you have it here still, even here in Israel, that they say, okay, I see the stamp, but if there's nobody on premises, I don't want to eat here. So some people are more lenient, some people are less. The point is that it's hard to trust. When it comes to restaurants, you have to be very careful. And even here in Tzfat, half of the places here that have a certification, the owner is not observant. So I think half of the pizzerias here on the Midrachov, they don't own by observant Jews. They're very nice Jews, everything is good, and it's closed on Shabbat, because we see that it's closed. But it's not owned by an observant Jew. You have to make sure that those specific pizzerias don't own the chametz. Now here in Tzfat it's actually a pretty strict city. So it's not so easy to get here a hechshel. But in a big city like Yerushalayim, you have to be careful. So, and again, it's not putting somebody down, you're more religious, you're less religious, it's just rules. Then there's rules and you need to follow them.
I'm going to ask you a question because I foresee that I'm going to lose a friend. You're quoting the Shulchan Aruch when you say serve the chametz.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that it is not specifically pieces of bread or cookies or it serves the chametz. And we have to understand that there's a chametz that being filled with the
plates. It's everything. You don't have to lose a friend. You just have to be very diplomatic. And, you know, when I became religious and they told me you have to sell your chametz to a non-Jew, and I was like, why sell? I'll just give it to him. I don't need to sell him one. I'm going to make a couple bucks. Nah. So I found a non-Jew, a friend of mine, and told him, here, take all my stuff. So I just gave everything away. I didn't have anything. And later on, I was like, wow, you know, I gave that individual stuff for hundreds of dollars. And then somebody told me, you gave it? You have to sell it. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to make money on that person. No, he's like, no, you don't give it and get rid of it. You sell it. So in the first year, I just gave everything away. So I was like, this is an expensive holiday. I mean, you just give all your stuff away. So, but it's not only the actual bread, everything. So the way to do it is to just be very diplomatic and not to come and say, was this plate sold? I'm not eating on this plate. So you have to know how to do it. At the end of the day, Avat Israel is also very important, and to break a person's heart or to insult them or to make them feel unworthy in your eyes because your plate, they didn't sell it on Pesach, you have to know how to do it.
Not only that, but anything that she brings to my house when she comes as a guest and she cooked.
Okay, that's when you might have a problem, yes? Yes? So, yes, you definitely have to be careful. Okay, let's move on. Because we talked about Mechirat Chametz, let's learn a little about that. That might answer some of your questions. Okay, Israel Shesh Birshuto Chametz VePesach. What happens for a Jew that has possession of Chametz during Pesach? Over Bechol Rega VeRega Al Bali Rei VeBali Matze. This is a very severe sin, just by possessing it. This is called Bali Rei VeBali Matze. You're not allowed to eat chametz, you're not allowed to see chametz, you're not allowed to own chametz.
These are the
your own chametz you're not allowed to see. If you're walking in the street and you see a non-Jew eating a roll, that's no problem with that. But your own chametz, you can't leave your own chametz on the counter in the corner. You're allowed to see it. In the street you can walk around and see it. And you can't control that.
Even if you see a Jew eating your roll, it's not yours.
It's not yours. Whenever it's not yours, you have no problem. So, but your chametz, you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to see, you're not allowed to own. V'chametz asur ba'ana'a l'olam. And if that chametz was used or seen or definitely eaten during Pesach, this chametz is prohibited forever. You can't use this chametz ever again.
Okay,
you cover the glass door. Yeah, take a piece of cardboard or foil, you cover the glass door.
So,
anything to cover the glass door. When we have glass cabinets, we also have in the kitchen a few glass cabinets, I just cover the glass with foil. And I cover it from the inside, that way nobody can peel it and see, hey, what's in here? And I had that already. We had a guest once who came in Pesach and he was like, hey, what's in here? And we're all like, no, no! So,
but you don't have to do it for plates and things.
Better to do it for plates too. So, I mean, this is an addition, a chumrah. Why? Because you don't want it to see even something that has been connected. Besides that, while you sell your chametz, you sell also your plates. And then, you don't want to have even the option of maybe someone coming and, oh, here's my plate, and opening the cabinet. The rabbi of the city, Rav Eliyahu, he even suggests not to even own the chametz at all. He's like, whatever chametz you have, just finish it or get rid of it. Don't keep it in the home. Just keep your plates and your stuff like that. But you have an open box of whatever it is, just give it, use it, finish it. A month before Pesach, clean your house. Don't even keep chametz in your house. And he says, why? Because, you know, you might get confused for something. And when he's talking about the plates, if you see the plates, you know, most people, they have it together. Some people can be like, oh, let me just pull out a plate. And you forget that it's sold and it's not yours. Then you're eating on something on stolen possession. So that's already a different problem. That's why it's good to close everything, hide everything, seal the doors, and be very particular. Now, it's very important to know that the chametz that was seen or owned by a Jew, asur be'ana'al olam. You can never enjoy it forever. You can't even sell it after Pesach. You can burn it or bury it or whatever it is. Va'afilu bitlu kodem Pesach. Even if you did a bitul chametz before Pesach, if you saw it or owned it before Pesach, that's it. It's gone. You got to get rid of it. Lachen mi sheyesh lo chametz rav ve'rotzeh limchoro le'nochri. What happens if you have a lot of chametz in your house? Mutar lemocho lifnei Pesach b'sha'a shechametz adayin mutar b'ana'ah. You're allowed to sell it. What we're just talking about, selling the chametz. Ve'lo yeh inyan mechirat chametz etzlo kemitzvat anashim melumada. And you have to make sure that this whole process of the selling, you're taking it very serious. You don't just do it like something so simple. Ela tzirich ligmor be'da'ato shemocho be'emet mechira gmura. You have to also take the consideration and to understand, right now I don't own my plates. I sold it to Joe. I don't own them. Not by saying, okay, we just made a joke here. And no, that's why you want to cover it, because if you open that cabinet during Pesach and you pull out a plate, you just stole. And you stole nothing, something that doesn't belong to you. Now, till when can you sell the chametz? Efshar limkor et hachametz rak ad sof sha'a chamishit be'erev Pesach. You can sell it till the end of the fifth hour and the day of Pesach, meaning the hour in the morning. Depending where you live, it can be about 10 in the morning, 9 in the morning, 11 in the morning. Klomar ad sha'a achat zmanit lifnei chatzot hayom. Usually it will be around 11 in the morning, depending where you are. Around 10, 11, 12. These are usually the round of the hours, where it happens. Lachen ha-mocher chamtso l'yedei harsha'a l'rav o l'bedin. What happens if you, usually what you do is you do it to the rabbi. And you don't go to your neighbor and say, hey, Joe, do you want to buy my chametz? You don't even know how to do it. It's just, it has to be done in a very particular way. That's where it's highly recommended that you go to the Beit Din, you appoint the rabbi to sell your chametz, you give him your address, you tell him exactly where your chametz is, who you are, and you appoint the rabbi to be your shliach, your representative by selling the chametz. Therefore, do not do it an hour before Pesach, do it the day before Pesach. You can go to the rabbi even today, by the way. He sells your chametz at the right time. But better to already do it today. Today, Baruch Hashem, you can do everything online. You don't have to go to the Beit Din. You just go online, write your name, do whatever you need to do.
But if you do that, doesn't that mean you can't eat any more chametz?
No. That's only going to be sold at the right moment, which means you can still own it and eat it. You can go today to the rabbi. Sign up, Give him your address. Tell him my chametz is in the storage, is in the right cabinet, in the kitchen, in the drawer, in the this, in that room. He writes everything down. He takes the information. He does a kinyan, it was called a kinyan, to you allow him to represent you. And an hour before Pesach, before the last of the fifth hour, he sells it. So until that hour, you're allowed to eat it. It's yours. You just appointed him to sell it for you. You just don't need it. He does it all for you. The rabbi does everything for you.
So you don't have to buy it, you have to buy it back, though.
The rabbi buys it back for you. That's why I said before, you came a little bit late, that don't run to the cabinet the second Pesach is over, because the rabbi has to go and buy it back. And usually the rabbis make sure, because they know everybody's hungry, so they go right away. But it's, usually half an hour, 40 minutes, an hour. I just don't eat for another hour. Now, an hour and a half. First of all, you can ask the rabbi. The rabbi will tell you. Don't touch yourself till 9 a.m., 9 p.m. The rabbi will tell you if you do that. And if you buy it online, they'll send you an email. And they'll tell, no, I'm not joking. You, 1 year, we were far out. We were in a faraway place. We went to conduct a little seder. I was in the middle of nowhere. So I got an email. Your chametz is now was bought again. And you can use it. Now, לכן המוכר חמצו על ידי הרשאה לרב או לבית דין, person who sells his chametz through a rabbi or a בית דין, a court, ימהר לעשות זאת כדי שתהיה לבית דין שהות למחורו לגוי לפני זמן איסורו. To make sure that if you do it through a rabbi, and I highly recommend you do it through a rabbi, through a בית דין, you want to make sure that you're doing it way in advance and not call him at 9 o'clock in the morning on Monday morning, hey, I have chametz. Don't leave it to the last minute. You can do it even today. Now, נוהגים למכור גם כלי חמץ. We also sell the vessels, plates, pots, pans. ואין צריך לטובלם אחר פסח. You don't have to toivel them in the mikveh after Pesach. Yeah, but you don't have to put them in the mikveh after Pesach. נוהגים לעשות את הרב למורשה לחתימת חמץ. You have to appoint the rabbi to be your representative. And you do that, like I said, by doing a kinyan. And there are more halachot in it. There are more rules how to do it. That's why I don't suggest to do the sale by yourself. Because you have to do it with what's called an arev kablan, and you have to make a shtar. And it's not, there's a lot of rules. That's why I made a mistake in the first year. I just gave it to my neighbor. Better go to a rabbi knows how to do it. Okay, minhag ha'olam lasot kinyan sudar b'sha shemarshim et harav. This is exactly what I said. You made a minyan, a kinyan. A kinyan means that you give over possession to the rabbi, you appoint him. Kevan sheyeshnam kama pirtei dinim b'mechirat haaretz, min haroi lismoch b'mechirat zot rak al rav ha'muvak. Since there's a lot of rules in the selling and buying of the chametz, please make sure that you're doing it with a rabbi that knows what he's doing. I told you before that 90-95% of the rabbis in the world, the real rabbis, they got an ordination, but they don't know how to do these things. You have to go to a rabbi that knows how to do it. You go to the Beit Din, this is a Dayan, who knows exactly how to run these things. Go to a rabbi of Yeshua, there's a very good chance that he doesn't even know how to sell the chametz. There's a lot of rules in it. כל הכלים שאינו מגיל לפסח צריך לשפשפם היטב בערב פסח. All the vessels, the utensils that you do not kosher before Pesach, you have to wash them real, real good לפני שעה שישית, at least 6 hours before Pesach, and to wash them in a way that there's not going to have any chametz on them. So even the pots and pans that you sell for Pesach, you can't have chametz on them by saying, okay, I'll wash it after the holiday. You have to wash them real good before Pesach. That's very important, because a lot of people say, okay, I know all this stuff is dirty, why bother? I'll give you now an example. We have an oven just for Pesach. So just know, when you eat here, you have the strictest certification. So we have everything just for Pesach. We don't kosher the stuff for Pesach. So we have an oven for Pesach. So the old oven gets pulled out and into the storage. But the oven still has to be cleaned. We cleaned our oven perfectly and miraculously, and I still ran the heat to make sure that if there's anything left, it's burnt. Why? Because even if I sold it, now this week this oven doesn't belong to me. And everything else, all our pots, everything we sell, we don't kosher anything. We have sets of everything just for Pesach. So even that has to be washed perfectly, very clean, and then we store it and then it gets sold. So even though you sell it, you still have to clean them. It's extremely important that the stuff that you sell, you don't just leave it in the corner and put a blanket on it. Put it in a room, close the door, lock it, or put it in a storage, or whatever it is that you don't see it. Put everything in one closet, put everything in one cabinet, and better even to lock it, that nobody will come in and be like, hey, what's here? And we had that happen too. We had one time in Pesach that one of the kids just went into one of the cabinets, took everything off, and we see him walking around. I was like, where did you get that? From the cabinet. How did you open? Oh no, I took it off, you didn't see a big sticker that it says Chametz? He's like, no, I just... He's like, no, he was able to read. He's like, I just didn't figure out why you put it there. Why did you put a sticker this big that says Chametz? And you know what he told me then? I thought the sticker is Chametz. So I put it aside. I was like, wow, great. So you want to make sure that it's all good and secure. And if you have little kids, to teach them that this drawer we don't open. So anyways, you got to make sure that it's all hidden very well. Now, what happens if you don't seal the room because you have to use the room for whatever reason? What happens, let's say so you have a big room. You took a room and you said, this is where I'm going to put all my chametz. You gathered everything in a corner. But you still need to use that room. It's a cabinet or whatever it is, a walk-in closet. And you have to take something that's going to be like a mechitza, like a piece of board or a tabletop. It has to be height of 20 tefachim, which is about this height. A tefach is 8 centimeters. So it would be the height of 1 meter and 60 centimeters, which would be about 70-something inches, about this height. This would be like a mechitza to hide it. Okay? This is also good. As long as you don't have access to it or you see it. If you push it all into a corner, you either take a piece of board, a cardboard, a tabletop, and you just lean it over that it will hide it and will be some type of a separation. Obviously, it's always better to box it and lock it into a room. But sometimes the reality doesn't allow you to do that. And a minhag, a lot of people, they have wine from a special rabbi. They got the wine from a big rabbi. They did Kiddush. Now it's very popular that they go to big rabbis. And he takes some of his wine and he pours it into many bottles and they sell these bottles. It's very common in the Rav Kanievsky's yeshivas. That's what they do. They buy a lot of wine. He does Kiddush or some or whatever it is, and they pour all the wine in and they sell these bottles to fundraise for the yeshivas. In Chabad, people carry wine that the Rebbe did Kos Shel Bracha, and they have a bottle and they pour wine in it all the time to keep the wine going. I mean, I have wine from the Baba Sali, I have wine from the Rav Kaduri, I have wine from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I have wine that we just keep pouring in it wine. So this type of wine, then if it's not kosher for Pesach, then you sell that wine too. And we have what's called lekach. It's the honey cake that is given on Yom Kippur. We have lekach also from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So on Pesach, you wrap it real good and you sell that too. Can't keep it, even though it came from a holy hand. It's still chametz.
It's still one piece?
No, we have a bag with crumbs.
Oh, wow.
So, and yeah, it's...
We keep it,
and sometimes if we need, we will mix it in food. I mean, it's not going to be so fresh, but a little crumb, it's still a holy crumb, And believe it or not, the crumb can do miracles. Mm-hmm. So we have holy wine, and wine that I bought from a part of it from Rav Kaduri, who was a very, very big tzaddik. I have wine from the Baba Sali, and it's special wine. And we sometimes will pour it into a cup, or somebody's very sick, we will mix just a drop, or just a little crumb. Mm-hmm. So that you have to sell for Pesach. Yes. You meaning the wine?
Anything that is holy.
It's fine. It's fine.
It's okay?
Yeah. Especially when it comes, mm-hmm. when it comes to something like that, when you just sold it for Pesach, as long as they didn't start touching it and eating it, you're not going to have a problem. It's not going to lose its holiness. Don't worry. Okay. Let's do a little bit more. I actually thought we'll have more time to do much more. So now let me skip to a few things that are very important. Okay, I thought I'll have much more time. Let me do just a few more things that are very important. One of them is called Yiruv Tavshilin. And Tiknu Chachamim Shelo Levashel Olafot B'Yom Tov Letzorech HaShabbat Shelacharav. We're not allowed to cook, on Yom Tov we're allowed to cook. But if it's attached to a Shabbat, we're not allowed to cook from Yom Tov for the Shabbat. This year we don't have that. But if comes a situation that you do have that, then we do what's called Yiruv Tavshilin. Yiruv Tavshilin is that you take, let's say a matzah, and a piece of fish that you're about to eat, and you say a certain bracha. And that allows you to cook during Yom Tov for the following day. But now what most congregations do, I don't know if you noticed, if you ever went to pray by tzans, look on the wall, I mean you see it from the women's section, there's a huge cabinet and there's a matzah in there. Did you ever notice that? So go next time when you go to Tzanz, look where the air conditioners are. You'll see a box, a matzah is in there, and it's glassed.
Why?
Because they do Iruv Chatzerot. And all the congregations, you might notice, might not notice that. But all congregations, they will do what's called Iruv Chatzerot. They do a certain blessing. Usually they will do it around Pesach, and they'll do it on a matzah. And that will allow everybody around in the Eruv to carry. And also to carry in the building. If you live in a building, you need to have Eruv Chatzerot. Which means you can carry from one apartment to the other. Not to say that in a place that needs an Eruv, you must have Eruv Chatzerot.
And even if you have an Eruv in
that? You don't notice it because you didn't do the Eruv. But they do the Eruv Chatzerot. We just see the line around, you know, the wire. But the person who did that, he runs the wire. It has to be kosher, has to be a certain height. It can be touched, can be moved. There's a way how to do the Eruv. And then the actual person that will do the Eruv says a certain bracha, and it has to be done on something that is now going to be public. So this matzah now belongs to everybody. And it has to be done on food. Now since the Eruv has to be valid during Pesach, so you can do the Eruv with a challah. So they do the Eruv with matzah. And you'll see in many congregations that they have the matzah hanging high, so everybody knows that's the Eruv, there's the Eruv here. So I'm just telling you now, next time you go to the Tzanz shul here, they have it out in the open in a nice box, and you'll see it and you know there's the Eruv there. I started with the Eruv Tavshilim that allows you to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbat. But they also do on Pesach what's called the Eruv Chatzerot.
I am taking for granted that they can have it all over Tzfat. Is that true?
Okay, the first opinion says that Tzfat does not need a Eruv because it's surrounded with mountains. Since it's surrounded with mountains, it's like a walled city. I don't know if you notice, on Purim you read the Megillah twice in Tzfat. because it's a walled city. We have twice Purim here. This, whoever holds by this opinion doesn't need an Eruv because we're surrounded with mountains. There's no concept even on Tiltul here. Some people do not go by that, and there is a Eruv in Tzfat. You just take it for granted. If you go to the graves where the Arizal is, before you cross the line with the mikvahs, look up and you'll see the Eruv. So some people, like you say, take it for granted. Oh, it's fat. There are thousands of religious people here. They're all carrying. I'll carry too. But some people don't go by that. I had a guest not too long ago, and I told him, by the way, I saw him, you know, putting things aside. I told him, you know, there's a Eruv here. He's like, I don't go by the Eruv. My wife carries, I don't hold by any Eruv. And I was like, fine.
By any
Eruv. So I was like, fine. No, that's very nice of you. I mean, you go by what you go by. But in Tzfat, I can tell you that A, you are surrounded with mountains. B, there is an Eruv in Tzfat, because there are many different congregations. There's Sephardis, there's Breslovers, there's Chabad, and each one goes by their own additions. But the majority, and I really met a fraction of people, they don't hold by anything here, and they don't carry in Tzfat. But any place that goes by an Eruv, then, I mean, any person that goes by an Eruv carries here in Tzfat, no problem. Now, we're not going to go through the entire rules of Eruv Tavshilin because we don't have it this year. But it's always good to do, regardless, an Eruv to be able also to cook on Yom Tov. So now we don't have time, but I suggest you go through the rules of the Eruv Tavshilin that you covered for the holiday. Now, a few more important things that we need to know. First of all, you light candles on Yom Tov, like any other Yom Tov. And it's important that you light it on time. It's important that you buy, if you light with wax, that the wax is kosher for Pesach. And if you light with oil, then the oil is kosher for Pesach. And there are candles that might not be kosher for Pesach because how they make the consistency of the wax. So you have to make sure that the candles that you buy it says kosher for Pesach. Same thing with the oil.
I just thought about something. I have a $100 candle that I got recently that's kosher for Pesach.
But you already used it?
You already used it.
Better to buy a new $100 candle for Pesach. Because if the wine was not kosher, maybe the plate was not, something might have been not kosher there. For the 5 shekels or 10 shekels that it costs, buy a new one. It's good to buy anything new for Pesach. So just make sure again that you know how and when to light your candles. A few more quick things that I want you to know. On Erev Pesach, this is important for you to know, we have to do what's called Korban Pesach. Many years ago when we had the Beit HaMikdash, we would take a sheep and make a sacrifice out of it. It's called Korban Pesach. Now we do not have it. On Erev Pesach, in Pesach, Monday afternoon, before Shkia, we have to read the Korban Pesach that we have in the Siddur, and it's extremely important. It might take you 15 minutes. Before Shkia. After you burn your chametz. Yeah, on Monday. After you burn the chametz, after Chatzot, when it's time to already pray Mincha, you can choose exactly when. Make sure you grab the Siddur and read the Korban Pesach. The teachings of Kabbalah explains that even though we don't do it physically with an animal, you must do it reading, and it's extremely, extremely important and powerful to do it. In any Chabad, you will find the Seder Korban Pesach. Usually it will be before the Haggadah. If you want to check now on your Siddur just to be double sure. And usually most of the Sidurim that will have a Haggadah in it will have it. If you don't, then in your Haggadah it will have Seder Korban Pesach. It's not so long. It should take you not more than 10-15 minutes. But make sure you're reading it. And you have to understand why you're reading in it and the importance of it. Another very important thing that you need to do, that's why I told you that before you come to our Seder, make sure that you're not late. Because on the first two nights of Pesach, we say Hallel after Shmona Esrei, and we say it in the night prayer. It's a very rare time that we say Hallel. Usually Hallel we say on Rosh Chodesh in Tfilah before Musaf, and we will say Hallel on Yom Tov, on Chol HaMoed, on Pesach. We celebrating one night. In the diaspora, they're celebrating two nights. We add Hallel into the prayer. So it's important to remember that, and if you don't go to shul, then go to shul. And if you don't go to shul, then do it at home. Exactly. Let's read it that you know exactly what we need to do. B'shnei lelot rishonim shel Pesach, in the first two nights of Pesach. And in Israel, it's one night. Omrim Hallel b'tzibur, you say Hallel with the congregation. Miyad achar tfilat amidah, right after you pray Shmona Esre. Ve'et ha-kadish shalem omrim acharav, and the Kaddish you say after that. Hallel Aleph b'Shabbat, what happens is the first night of Pesach happens on Shabbat. Then you say Vayuchulu ha-shamayim before that. Now Belel Sheni, in the second night, we say Hallel, and after that, you know what we start saying? Which is extremely important, we start counting the Omer. In Israel, we don't have a second night, we start counting it from the first night. So, we're going to learn a lot about Tfilat HaOmer following Pesach. Because a lot of women say, I don't need to know, even men. But a lot of people don't bother to do that. So, we are going to learn a lot. So stay tuned, because we're going to learn a lot of very interesting information why we say Hallel. And you want to make sure that you say that, because if you miss one night of saying Hallel with a blessing, you can't say it with a blessing anymore. Omer. What did I say? Hallel. Sorry. You have to be on top of it, because if you miss one night of saying the Omer without a blessing, then the next, till the end, you can't say that, you can count it, but without the blessing. So make sure that you go on Erev Pesach to Shul, so you can say Hallel, so you can say Sfirat HaOmer, that you can participate in everything and not forget about it. And saying Sfirat HaOmer is extremely important. It takes exactly 5 minutes out of your life, and we're going to learn a lot of it. I know maybe now you might say, okay, it's just saying a sentence. No, there's a lot in it. And in the next class, we're going to learn about the Lel Seder. I'm going to just explain a little bit how it's connected later on to the Sfirat HaOmer and why it's extremely, extremely important. Hold on for just a second with a question, and then I just want to... No. You mean before Pesach?
No.
Better to do it during the day. Better to do it during the day. Yeah. Monday night, this year, in Israel, you have to start counting the Omer. And an individual like you, that you have been here for the past, you're not a resident of Israel, but you have been here for at least 90 days, you count the Omer according to Israel, not according to outside of Israel.
That's going to affect Lag BaOmer.
Of course it's going to affect Lag BaOmer, but if you live in Israel, it shouldn't bother you. If you're planning on leaving and coming back, right now, even though you're only here for a few months, if you live in Israel, you live in Israel. If you're now temporary here, but you're not so temporary, you're already here for months. Yeah, and you're only leaving in August, right?
September.
You have to go by the land of Israel. So you're going to start counting the Omer on Monday. And not because you are a visitor, and say, okay, I'll start counting the next day. That will be in effect if you came here just for Pesach. Since you live here, and you're going to leave way after Shavuot, you count like us.
So Lag BaOmer will start on Saturday night?
Yeah.
Okay. Here
in Israel. So the Lag BaOmer will start exactly the same. But since you are here, I'm specifically talking to you, because anyone who lives in Israel goes by the Israel count. But you and many others that come and spend a year, half a year, they say, oh, maybe because I'm American and I don't live here, I should start counting the next day. This would be right if you're planning on leaving way before the end of the Omer, or if you just came for a week. People come for a week, for Pesach. People come from America or from wherever. So you specifically and many others that live here for a short period of time, they have to count according to our count, which is Monday. And then Monday night, and exactly like you said, Lag BaOmer will turn on Motzei Shabbat this year. This is Lag BaOmer. Okay, there's a lot more.
Can you clarify when you say halal on
Monday night?
At shul.
In shul. I mean, if you don't go to shul, say it at home. But better to say it in shul, because most people that will stay home and pray will forget that you have to say halal. Now, when you're in shul, you'll see even in shul, people just continue, and then the chazan will say the bracha, and they'll be like, ooh, I almost forgot. So the advantage of going to shul, same thing with Sfirat HaOmer, by the way. There were a couple of years that my wife did not come to shul from being exhausted from the preparation, and she forgot to say Sfirat HaOmer. And then at the end of the seder, I told her, did you say Sfirat HaOmer? Oh, I totally forgot about it. So you want to make sure. Now, also, not only Sfirat HaOmer, also Halel. We're going to say Halel in the Lel Seder. But you have to say Halel, that's one of the mitzvot in Arvit. So if you don't go to shul, make sure you put some type of a mark in your Sidur. But since it's an auspicious time, it's a Yom Tov, go to shul. That's why I started the class by saying, I know you're going to be in shul, make sure you rush home. Don't take your time, because we have to start the Seder. This was, maybe I should have been more bold with my statement. It was a hint, go to shul. This is a Yom Tov. This is the most holiest day of the year. We're going to learn about it in a few minutes. Lel Seder, the night of Pesach, is the most holiest night of the year. What happens on this night doesn't even happen on Yom Kippur. So this is the night that you have to go out of your way. Go to shul. Show up in a synagogue. And hear the Halel and pray and do whatever you need to do. Yes?
So you count the Omer after you get home from the station? Not before
you... No, in the shul.
If
you went to shul... If you went to shul, you will count it with the congregation.
Before the Seder.
Yeah, before the Seder. And actually, if for whatever reason you did not have the option of going to shul, or you live far away and there's no shul, count the Omer before Seder. That's part of, there's the order. If you notice, we're going to go through it in a few minutes in the next class. The nights, you know how it's called? It's called Lel Seder. This Seder is the order. This night should have been called Lel Matzah, the night of Matzah, or Lel, I don't know what,
or
Lel Pesach. It's called Lel Seder because that's where we're making Seder. We're organizing everything. And the word Seder is I don't know the word in English. How would you say in English that one comes after the other? Order. Seder is also order, which means everything that you do on Pesach from Sunday morning, meaning from, I mean, again, if it will be a different year, from 24 hours before you burn the chametz, there's a seder, there's an order. You can't mix the order. So if you mix the order throughout those 24 hours and 48 hours going into Pesach, you messed it up. You didn't do it right. You can't do whatever you want. It has to be in a certain order. And we're going to learn in a few minutes why. And that's why it's called Lel Seder. Because first, we're making organization. Everything we're putting in its place. Like we're in a messy house. More than that, if it doesn't go through the order, you're not doing it right. And you're not going to get the benefit of the holiday. So, if happens to be that you don't go to shul, then still say the Halel, still say Sfirat HaOmer, and then do the Seder. And the reason why I recommend them to go to shul is because you will stay at home, you will forget.
On the subsequent days between Passover and shul, do you say count the Omer at sunset, in the morning, in the evening, before you go to bed?
The right way to do it is you count it after the sun, after the stars go out.
The stars go out?
At night.
At night.
Night.
It means they come out.
Yeah, after the stars come out.
Yeah.
So, I translate it in Hebrew, you say tzeta kochavim, they go out. So come out, yes, when they appear, after three stars appear. Now, if for whatever reason you forgot, or you fell asleep, or something happened, You can say it till about 4 in the morning, 4 or 5 in the morning, with a blessing. If you forgot, and the next day you remembered, you can count it, but you can't say the blessing. But if you that morning forgot completely, then the next day you can count without a blessing. So you have to be very particular. And this is, you know, this is important. It's good that you asked. So let's just go over it, because we're not going to have the opportunity to go over it again. This year, Monday night, we count Sfirat HaOmer right after the stars come out. That's the first night. Let's assume that for a whole week I was very particular and I was making sure that every night after the stars come out, I say Sfirat HaOmer. One night I was busy and I fell asleep. And I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning. You wash your hands and you say Sfirat HaOmer with a blessing. Till Netzach Hama, till the dawn, you can say it with a blessing. If I fell asleep, I forgot. I fell asleep, I woke up in the morning, it's 2 in the afternoon, it's 10 in the morning, doesn't matter. I can still say Sfirat HaOmer of that day, just without a blessing. And the next night, I continue back with a blessing. If I forgot that day at all, I skip the day. And the next night, I will count Sfirat HaOmer till the end without a blessing. Till the end. You can't just, you lost it. And if there's one night that you have a doubt, you just don't, did I count yesterday? I didn't remember if I count. You don't remember. You have a doubt. Then you continue counting without a blessing. But it depends, again, there's different rules, how far in you are. If you counted the majority of it, then some say you will continue with a blessing. But if you're not 100% sure, then you do it without a blessing. And again, it depends how far in. If you already counted 30 days, 40 days, then most likely it's already in your system, and most likely you did count, and you can continue with a blessing. But just remember that if you forgot one night, the next day you don't say it with a blessing. And if that day you forgot completely, then the following night when you count, no more blessings, and you continue till the end without a blessing. And that's where you see, you know, towards the end of the Omer, you might see it when you go to a synagogue, that very few men are already saying it with a blessing. Because yes, then yes. Yeah, so now today there's a smartphone application that will remind you to say the Omer, and that's why it's good to go to pray in a shul, because the shul will count and it reminds you. But Sfirat Omer is extremely important. We're going to learn about it after Pesach, and the, how to do it, why to do it, what's the connection. It's very, very powerful.
Is Sfirat HaOmer, just like in general, a time of chesed or gevurah?
Excuse me?
Is it a time of chesed or gevurah?
It's every night.
Every night is something else.
No, but as a whole, doesn't it have a...
As a whole, it's you're able to tap into all the sfirot. Okay. And you have to refine all the sfirot. That's why we start the first week is the sphere of chesed. And we will count chesed shebechesed, gevurah shebechesed, tiferet shebechesed. We count each Sfira and each Sfira. Most people don't even know what they're doing. They're just doing it like a parrot, which is also good. After Pesach, we will learn why we do it, how we do it, why we do seven in seven. We're going to go through all the Sfirot. We'll have a lot of fun during the Omer, because it's a very powerful time. But if you did not start the whole process in El Seder, it's almost worthless. That's why Lel Seder is the most important night, and then we start. And that we're going to learn Bezrat Hashem in a few minutes. In the meantime, let me just wish you a Chag Sameach, happy and kosher Pesach. And should be a kosher Pesach and a happy Pesach. And somebody asked me not too long ago, why do you say Chag Pesach Kasher V'Sameach? Why do you add the kosher? But Shavuos doesn't need to be kosher? And Sukkot doesn't have to be kosher? Why Dafka Pesach? So I told him, if you take the word Pesach and the word Kasher, Pesach Kasher, then it has six letters in it, and each of these six letters are all the holidays that we have throughout the year. The Pei of Pesach is Purim, the Samech of Pesach is Sukkot, the Chet of Pesach is Chanukah, the Kaf of Kasher is Kippurim, The Shin of Kasher is Shavuot, and the Reish of Kasher is Rosh Hashanah. So Pesach, Kasher, I include all the holidays of the entire year in Pesach. And Pesach is one of the most powerful nights of the year. And the entire week is powerful. Every day in that week is beyond important. And when I'm saying powerful, is what you can achieve this week. What energy you can tap into, and take advantage of that. It can benefit you for the entire year. This one week of being on a diet, and being particular, and being very particular about details, every night of this week, you can draw megawatts of energy to last you for the entire year to deal with all your problems. So we want to wish you a happy Pesach and a kosher Pesach. Amen.